Amen. I want to thank you for that prayer. And I would venture to guess that if we took a poll in the congregation, there's a substantial majority of us that would say it is not well with our soul. And that's because we live in a fallen world, and we believe in a concept called total depravity. Satan is constantly attacking the children of God. And your prayer, Brother Tim, really comes to light, too, because you mentioned David a number of times. And we're going to turn back to the story of David, because we've been kind of looking at his battle with Goliath. We started out with a sermon a while back. Well, actually, it was a Wednesday night message. And we looked at how David was anointed. He, just out of nowhere, God chose this little shepherd boy, not because of anything the shepherd boy did, just because God's good, and kind of in a similar way. We also saw where the scriptures tell us that each one of us is anointed. And then last week, we looked at a sermon and looking at kind of like David being a UFC harp player and how God can take the things that are seemingly incongruent in our life. And we have abilities that we don't know about, but those abilities have to be worked through God. What I'd like to do is get to the main point where David kind of kills Goliath, because I think in the message, if you'll give me your attention for about 30 minutes or so, I think in this message, God has left us some powerful lessons about his sovereignty and about our weakness and about he can use us when we have a good attitude. So if you got your Bibles with you, please, please, please turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 26. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 26. Maybe it, we're going to see David on the day that he kills Goliath, and that's good, because you never know when you wake up in the morning what opportunity you might have or what problem you might face. And that's why it's good that you're in church today, because who knows? Maybe it's going to be today that the Lord gives you or will speak powerfully into you, because this thing I know, we all have Goliaths. or maybe the Lord's going to give you something today that's going to sustain you 3 months from now. Or maybe the Lord's going to give you something today that you can just share with a friend. But it's good that you're in church today, because we never know what opportunities or problems we're going to face. So David wakes up, and y'all know the backdrop. He is instructed to take some food to his brothers who are at the battle lines fighting the Philistines. And he's not really old enough to go to war. He's a harpist. I mean, he's kind of a jazz cat for the king, playing in the king's court in his spare time. And his father gives him some cheese and bread and says, you know, take it to your brother. And when he gets there, he hears this rumor that there's this really big guy, a really, really big guy named Goliath, and he's a champion for the Philistines, and all the Israelites are scared. And that's where we're picking up in the story. Verse 26, First Samuel chapter 17, verse 26. And David spake to the men that stood before him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? And who is this uncircumcised Philistine? I double dog dare you to use that phrase in a conversation this week. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that shall defy the armies of the living God? Now, so you know, David's been there about less than a minute, and these people have been out there for 40 days. The threats that all the other people for hearing them for 40 days, that they've been hearing for 40 days, hadn't moved them to action. But David gets moved to action in a matter of moments. And so he asks this question. Verse 27, and the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And let me tell you about that, because just a few verses earlier, King Saul had told them that, hey, whoever defeated Goliath would get his daughter in marriage. Now, I'm guessing that means that Saul's daughter was kind of pretty, because, you know, not when, you know, otherwise it wouldn't be mine. And then he says, hey, I'm trying to be gentle, but, you know, Bible's Bible. And then he says, hey, you're going to get to live tax-free for the rest of your life. And that's pretty cool. So verse 28 is where we're going to encounter what I'm going to call the first force. It is a person, but it represents to me a force. And there are three forces in this passage that will represent the same forces that drive you down today and have driven you down this week and last month and last year in your life. Before I give you the first one, though, I just want to point out something, that as children of God, we are predestinated. That's good news. Our destiny is secure, and we are anointed. But the constant companion of destiny is doubt. You hear voices in your head pulling you down. You hear voices all the time pulling you down. So the constant companion of destiny is doubt. And David is a man of great destiny. God has anointed him to be a future king and a great warrior, but the enemy will always attack what God anoints. So if you got a great destiny, and you do because you're predestinated, then you're going to have some great doubts at times. Doubts are going to come along with it. And you would think that with this great family, that we as the elect family of God could just eliminate all doubt. You know, the Bible says I'm chosen. It says I'm anointed. It says I'm peculiar to the Lord. It calls me redeemed. It calls me sanctified. And yet I'm constantly struggling with these doubts. And I want, when we read this next verse, I want you to look for yourself in this passage and think about the forces that act upon you. Verse 28. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why comest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride, the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou might see the battle." Hey, let me ask you something. What's Eliab doing right now? He's accusing. Now, Satan has a lot of titles. But one of the titles that he has in the Bible, I think it's Revelation 12:7, he is called the accuser of the brethren. And when the enemy comes, and he does come like Eliab, he comes to drag you down. I know how wicked you are. I know what you're doing. I can't even believe you're in church today. Who are you to say amen? You know how you lived last week. Who do you think you are trying to study the Bible? I got to share something with you. When we come back from Oak Hill Primitive Baptist Church, awesome congregational hymns. And they always give us CDs of the hymns. And I was we were listening to hymns on the way to the church from one of the Oak Hill things. And because the microphone is in the front of the church and, you know, visiting minister sits up with the normal. Y'all know how we are as Primitive Baptists. I'm sitting up near the front, brother. My voice is very clear on the CD. I didn't know I sang so off key. I not only sing off key, I sing loudly off key. And I'm driving down the road, and I'm just like, dude. And I'm looking at Maria, and I'm like, man, I'm bad off key. And Josh says, yeah, it wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't so loud. Today in song service, who are you to sing? Why are you standing up there? And guys, if y'all think that, just let me know. I mean, seriously, it won't hurt my it might hurt my feelings, but for the greater glory of God, I'm willing to suppress my off-keyness. But I get voices. Seriously, who are you to sing? You can't sing a lick. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think it's bad. Y'all get these voices too. Accusing. We all have Eliabs accusing us. And here's the thing. I can't imagine what it's like to be David in this moment, because David has come here and he's being accused by the very same person that he came to serve. Verse 17. And Jesse said unto David, his son, "Take now for thy brethren an ephod of parched corn and 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousands, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge." He was sitting here to serve these people, and now Eliab, the very person he sent to serve, is accusing him. In other words, David, I know how wicked you are. Well, you know, actually, bro, I just came here to bring you some cheese crackers. I'm just here. And David had to be upset. I mean, have you ever been accused by anybody you're trying to assist? It's the worst feeling in the world. I'm talking to all the mamas out there that right now have a teenage daughter. And you look at them and you say, "You're not going out of the house dressed like that." And they look at you and they roll your eyes. They might even be stupid enough to say, "I hate you." And then they stomp off. You know what it's like. You're just trying to help them, and they're just throwing it right back at you. And so David, and I want you, kids, look at me. Watch his response. It'll blow your mind. And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" Now, I'm going to talk real quick about two fictional kids, and let's just call them, Joshua and Caleb. Just pulling them out of the air. And maybe this situation has occurred in your house. It's a fictitional situation. It never happens. But let's just say that perhaps the older one is Joshua, and Caleb comes on in, and Joshua, he's a really smart kid, and he's good with words, and Caleb comes on inside, and he says, "I just did 10 pull-ups." And Joshua says, "Those aren't real pull-ups." And hear what might happen. I don't know. "Joshua! Those are real pull-ups. Joshua!" Maybe that's happened in your house. I don't know. And so maybe, if that happened in my house, what I'd be trying to teach the younger child Caleb is, maybe it's better for you to get better at ignoring Joshua than arguing with Joshua. Notice what David does, boys. He doesn't say, "Eliab, just check the text message from Dad. I'm not wicked." Watch what he does. This blows my mind. It's such a simple strategy of dealing with accusations. Verse 30. Get out your highlighter. "And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner." Here is what you have to learn. Learn to turn. And I'm talking to the kids, and I'm talking to the adults, I'm talking to the juniors, I'm talking to the seniors. Learn to turn. Because the devil is really good about accusing you. It's not people that you have to worry about. It's what you know. It's what you know about you that the devil will use against you to try to tell you that you can't do it. That you won't speak with the voice, you know. And let me tell you something. The devil will not speak with the voice of God trying to help you out. So in your mind, learn, just turn away when you hear those voices. "You're so stupid, just turn. You're such a horrible person, just turn." Have you learned to turn yet? I'm learning it. And I can tell you, it'll help you so much to just learn to turn. When Satan is in your head, instead of screaming, "Eliab," just turn away. And what's cool is David knew that it wasn't Eliab's call whether to fight against Goliath. He's just saying, "Hey, I want to speak to a supervisor. I want to talk to your supervisor." And the next time Satan is in your head and starts dredging up your past, I have a strategy. Just turn away and appeal to his supervisor, because he's not running the show. Jesus has already taken whatever it is that Satan is using against you in your head, and he's put it on the cross. It's paid for. It's redeemed. Satan has no authority over you, and things of this earth are going to grow dim in the glory of the light of Jesus Christ when we really turn to Christ. Verse 31. "And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul. And David said to Saul, 'Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine.'" Wait a minute, dude. Aren't you that harp kid? I mean, all you've done right now is just pluck a couple of strings, and you're not going to put Goliath to sleep. I mean, thanks and all, but you're just a kid. This is a fight. The harp's not going to help you. Goliath is upwards of 900 pounds. He's got over 9 feet tall. He's got over 100 pounds of armor. He is the greatest champion that the country of Philistia had ever had. And David is asking to fight? And so Saul responds, verse 33. "And Saul said to David, 'Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war, from his youth. I wonder what the devil's been telling you that you're not able to do this week. Doesn't he start most everything he says to you with the phrase, "You're not able"? You know, that you're not able to handle this. You're going to crack. You're going to choke. You're going to send your kids to therapist for real. You're not able. Come on, let's be serious. This is too much for you. You're not able. You're only. And sometimes, hey, maybe somebody in this room has been a divorcee. You're not able. You're only a divorcee. You're not even a real Christian. If you were a real Christian, you would have worked that marriage out. You're only a mom. That's not even a real job. What is he doing? He's belittling David. You can't forgive them. You're not able. And Saul says, "You're not able." And so, and the first thing, one of the ways that Satan attacks us is by accusation, the accuser of the brethren. But another way that Satan can attack us is by belittling. By belittling us. "You're not able." I wonder who or what is belittling you right now. Accusation hurts because it actually speaks to our character. But belittling hurts because it speaks to our ability. "You're not able." And it can be quite discouraging because here's the thing. A lot of what Saul said was actually correct. I think about this for just a second. This is a big guy. Correct. "You're a little guy." Correct. "This guy's been fighting since he was a kid." Correct. "You're just a harpist." Correct. I mean, who? But what David knew how to do is so instructive for us. Who've ever felt kind of cut down about being that big? Who have ever felt cut down to size? Who've ever looked at our experience and our pedigree and our resume and just thought, "We're not able"? And what gets me all the time is I think that, you know, personally, I run into people and I think, man, they're smarter than me. And so I kind of live in this kind of constant state, this constant inferiority complex. Everybody knows stuff. I don't know stuff. And every now and then I'll get a glimpse into the window and I figure out they're just as stupid as I am. Well, you know, maybe they know a smidgen more on this itty bitty topic, but taken into the big picture, let's go. And the experience that you don't have is not an indication. Let me say this again. The experience that you don't have is not an indication of what God can do in your life. We serve a big God. He's a sovereign God. And it doesn't matter what you can't do when God calls you. And so David hears these discouraging words. Verse 34. "And David said unto Saul, 'Thy servant kept his father's sheep.'" Well, that really builds some confidence. Thanks, David. Taking care of sheep. That right there is going to West Point and then into the Green Berets. I mean, you're a sheep keeper. Now, I know some of y'all might have another translation, and your translation says, "But David." And I was going to entitle this message, "How Big Is Your Butt?" "But God, who is rich in mercy," how big is it? And David said, "Hey, here's the thing. I used to keep sheep." Well, that builds a lot of confidence. But here's the thing. He keeps on going and dig this. "And there came a lion and a bear, and he took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him." That's such a cool phrase. And I hope that people say, you know, John went after it. I went out after him. I hope they say that about you. You know, his sermons weren't always that good. Sometimes we got a single. Sometimes we got a double. Once in a while, a home run. But it's a lot of strikeouts. But you know what? At least he went after it. I hope people say that about me. I mean, John is weird, but at least he goes after it. And when the situation, he says things perhaps he shouldn't say in the stand about the bigness of, anyway. And when the situation turned, because sometimes it does, you got to go after it. The Christian life is not a couch potato life. It's not a case of rah, sarah, whatever will be, will be. We don't believe in absolute predestination of all things. We just believe in predestination of God's family. So sometimes you have to go after it. The Apostle Paul says, in having done all, stand. So even after you've done everything you need to do, there's still something to do. You need to stand because you might have to fight. Having done all, stand. Sometimes you got to go after it. And it said, and David said, when the lion and the bear and I took a lamb out of the flock, I went after him. Verse 35. I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by the beard and I smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. It doesn't matter how big your giant is. It matters how big your God is. Troubles seem minuscule when God is magnified. And now the same guy who said he couldn't five verses ago says, verse 37, and Saul said unto David, go. Go with your bad self. You know, harp and all, you just go, you know. Verse 30, and the Lord be with thee. You know, because a lot is on the line. And if David loses, then all of Israel is going to be in bondage to Philistia. So Saul wants David to be appropriately attired. Verse 38. And Saul armed David with his armor. And he put an helmet of brass upon his head. So he armed him with a coat of mail. Kind of like the original Under Armour. Just that's for free. Verse 39. And David girded his sword upon his armor and essayed to go, but he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off. Hey, here's the point. Brothers and sisters, you got to be yourself. And that's why we struggle at Camp Creek Church to be an authentic church. And because if we're pretend Christians, it ain't going to work. We might as well just be a social club if we're pretend Christians. I come to church. I got my suit on. I got my tie on. I arrive at 10:30. I'm singing. I give appropriate amounts of money. I go home. And inside, my marriage is falling apart. My kids are dabbling in drugs. I'm about to go bankrupt. But man, I've got it together on the outside. We don't need that. Having it together on the outside is not going to fix anything in the heart. We need Jesus. And when you pretend you got it all together, what you're denying is that you need Jesus. And let me tell you something. Every one of us needs Jesus, from the oldest member to the youngest member. And when we do good, we need Jesus. When we do bad, we need Jesus. When we preach home run sermons, I need Jesus. When I strike out, I need Jesus. When I baptize people, I need Jesus. And when I upset people, I need Jesus. There is not a moment in my life or your life that you don't need Jesus. And we need to be authentic people. And I tell you something, there's something so glorious about authenticity. Because taking off the burden of pretension and pretending, oh, that's such a heavy burden. I got it all together. Our church, you know, the pastor that needs everybody. That's why I don't mind telling you I screwed up. I screw up. I don't mind telling you this because I don't want to be weighed down with the burden of pretending that y'all are a bunch of perfect people. You're not. You're weirdos. You are a freak show. And I am chief freak. And it is so freeing to say that. I don't have to pretend. Y'all don't have to pretend. Because of Christ. You understand the liberty that we're given in Christ? We are allowed to screw up because of Christ. He didn't screw up. And so we're good. Me and God, we're good. My problem is it's because of my screwed up flesh. My screwed up flesh is telling me I'm not good. I'm not okay. I'm not able. And yesterday I did this and I did that and he's accusing and he's belittling and he's cutting me down. And that's my problem. When all I got to do is turn to Christ. I just got to turn away. I got to ignore the belittling. Because I got to remember that everything I am is because of Christ. It's all about him and not my ability. I'm not able. Yeah, you're right. I'm not able. Just what Jesus was able and he kicked your backside. Okay. Verse 39, and David girt, oh yeah, I'm sorry, verse 40. And he took his staff in his hand, and he chose them 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in a script, which is a pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Now, David drew near because he was fighting for God. But brothers and sisters, I want you to know it is equally important how David approached Goliath. It was like this in ancient Israel, and warfare is like this back then, and warfare is like this today. These 3 components have not changed. And I can say that because I learned it at West Point. Hey, 3 types of components to an army. You got the really powerful cavalry, and they kind of maximize, people that can maximize speed. Like your Apache helicopters today. Back then it was chariots and horsemen. And then you have your infantry. We still have infantry today. And back, you know, they give you a rifle and they give you a bayonet because if you run out of bullets, you're going to engage in hand-to-hand combat. So your really strong people would be in the infantry. The foot soldier and the swordsmen would be in the infantry. But then you got speed, you got power. There's one other thing you got to have, and that's distance. If you can strike your enemy down from a distance, you cut down the number of enemies that you have to go on face to face. That's why the discus was invented in ancient Greece. That throw those things, that throw their javelins, and these are projectile warriors. Boom. And there's your slingers. Boom. So you have your cavalry, you have your infantry, and you have your artillery. Well, slings were pretty awesome weapons, and historians say that a slinger could actually get that thing going so fast it turned 6 to 7 revolutions per second. And we have Goliath, and he's a really big swordsman, and he's just this versus little old swinger. David approached and came near to him. Verse 41, and Philistine came on and drew near to David. And the man that bare his shield went before him. Now, there's this theory, I don't know if you know this, but there's this theory that Goliath, because of the condition that made him 9 foot tall, that condition also of giantism also causes people to be somewhat nearsighted. That's kind of interesting. Sometimes your greatest strength can also be your greatest weakness. Sometimes your greatest strength can be your greatest weakness. Are you a passionate person? Passion's great, but can also be a great weakness. Are you a phlegmatic person and think you just take it as it is and you can absorb a lot? There are a lot of times when that is a great gift, but there's a lot of times when that's a great weakness too, because sometimes people need you to get stirred up about stuff. Sometimes your greatest strength can be your greatest weakness. And so he's approaching David, following his shield bearer, And when the Philistine looked about, verse 42, and saw David, when he looked about and saw David, he finally saw him, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. Okay, here they go again, underestimating. He looked, he saw a kid, he's underestimating, and then he tries to provoke David. This is what the enemy does. The enemy will accuse us, he will belittle us, and he will provoke us. The Philistine looked about and saw David. He disdained him, and the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest at me with staves? Those are sticks. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh into the fowls of the air and to the beast of the field. I want to tell you something right now. Goliath is right. If David had gotten close, we never would have read this story because David would be dead. If David had come down close range, Goliath would have killed him because he would have been fighting the enemy on the enemy's terms. Don't fight the enemy on the enemy's terms. Don't let the enemy, Lord Wellington at Waterloo will tell you this, don't let the enemy define the battlefield. It's so cute. I go over to firms like King and Spalding and Austin and Byrd, and it's so cute. Because they'll have their eight attorneys, and I walk into a conference room, and inevitably there's always a window that's facing. And I walk in, and there's 8 to 10 attorneys, and it's little old me and maybe my investigator. The sun is always shining in my eyes. The mind games that these people play. And it is, just be careful. So a lot of times I'll say, no. You're coming to my office. And then they show up with their gaggle of attorneys, 8 to 9 to 10. And they show up in the waiting room and I go, oh, they're not all coming back. Just you, only you have filed an, oh, but they're with my friend. I don't care, just you. In other words, we're fighting this on my terms. But sometimes it's good to go over there and look at the eighth attorney and point at him and say, hey, can you tell me about this case? And they don't know what they're doing. Anyway, sorry. Sometimes my great, anyway. Even if David, let me tell you something. If he had fought Goliath on Goliath's terms, he would have been killed, even though he was fighting them for the right reason. Even though he really, really loved God. You know, you can really love God and still be losing in life because of your approach. You can really believe the Bible and still not have success in your home because of your approach. You can really love God and still be broke and in debt because of your approach. You can really love God and struggle with anger and forgiveness because of your approach. And here's what David knew. You have weapons. And David knew. Here Goliath is trying to provoke him to fight him on his level, but David would not have it because David knew who he was, what he had to do, and his approach is an approach that he would not compromise. He's not going to fight Goliath hand to hand. He's fighting sling to sword, and a slinger will beat a swordsman any day of the week as long as the slinger doesn't get too close. Keep your distance from Satan. You know, sling your stone, kill the crud that's come out in your life. Oh, mom and dad want me back before 11 o'clock at night. Right. Because we want you to keep your distance from temptation. And like my daddy said, nothing ever good happens after 11 o'clock at night, son. Especially on dates. I mean, what really good can happen at 1 o'clock in the morning? I mean, seriously, people. Keep your distance. Your co-kids or, you know, kids on your team or kids at your high school are doing stuff that you know to be wrong. Well, I can just go hang with them. I'm not going to participate. Keep your distance. It's just stupid to put yourself in a situation like that. Don't let the enemy draw you in. Don't let them get close to you. Keep your distance. Verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, thou comest at me with a sword and spear and with a shield, but I come at thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. And this day the Lord will deliver thee into my hands, and I will smite thee, and I'll take thine head from thee, and I will give it to the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day, unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Let me tell you something. This is one of the reasons why God allows us to fight our battles, why he doesn't take care of every little problem that we have, so that all the earth can know that he is God through your life. When you live a life and troubles come on you and trials and tribulations, and you live a life when and you live a life that glorifies Jesus Christ, let me tell you something. God's name is glorified. Hey, how'd you make it without dead? Mom? Through the power of Christ. At her loneliest moment, she'll tell you, it's when Christ came closest. And so people can watch, and people will be watching. How are you making it? When accusations come and the belittlement comes and the people are provoking you, and when you respond in Christ-like manner, the name of God is exalted. And the converse of that is true as well. When you act like everybody else, people will say, "What's so special about Jesus? You're just like everybody else." Be careful what you say. Be careful how you respond. Be careful how you treat people. Verse 47. Because God is big. Verse 47. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth. Here we go again. All the assembly is going to know. He had just told them that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's. Now, the assembly he's talking about is not just the Philistines, but it's the assembly of Israel, too. Sometimes the people of God need to be reminded. God wins. God won. And God will win in your life to the degree that you're following Christ. It's all about Jesus. And all the assembly will know that the Lord saveth, not with sword and spear. We're not going to fight your battles on your terms, Satan. We're not going to fight like everybody else is fighting. We got a different calling. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. But he didn't come any closer. Why? Because he's a slinger. And you have to learn how to draw battle lines against your doubts. I am fighting you from here. And so people in here might be fighting a battle right now. Are you fighting it in the right way? Because if you're not, I got a word of encouragement for you. Change your approach. Keep your distance. If you're constantly struggling, who is it? Tony Robbins, like, he's one of these like motivational speakers, but he said something I read one time and I'm like, well, that makes sense. He says, you know, just like the fly that just keeps flying into the window, trying to get out when all the idiot thing has to do is just fly around the window. I mean, it's kind of insane. If you're doing the exact same thing time after time after time and you're getting the exact same result time after time after time, hey, maybe you just need to change your approach and just kind of pull back a little bit. Verse 49, and David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone. One stone. And I want to remind you real quick that that the big ugly problems will come at you, but you only need one name. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. I was happy to read that verse because it reminds me of something that I read over in Colossians chapter 2, verse 15. And Jesus, having spoiled principalities and powers, he made show of them openly. That means he made a spectacle of them, triumphing over them. David triumphed over this Philistine with a sling and with a stone. Jesus triumphed over Satan with a cross and with his blood. Two sticks were enough for the sin of the elect family to be hung on his shoulders. And when the devil calls you closer, don't come. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 3. 2 Corinthians 10, 3. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalted itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Some of the biggest battles we fight are not against others, but against ourselves. The battles we combat in our head and our heart, our enemy will invade our thoughts and try to accuse, belittle, and provoke us. And if we don't approach the fight in the right way, he can crush our spirit and derail our lives. So how do we defeat the battle? How do we defeat the enemy when they seem so much bigger, so much stronger this week? Let me tell you something. This week, I promise you, the giant's going to come. And he'll want you to worry. What do you do? How do you handle the giant within, because it's one thing to turn from Eliab, our brother. How do you turn from the Eliab in your heart? Because we all got Eliabs in our heart. I mean, it's one thing when Saul doubts you, but how do you handle the doubt in your head? I mean, it's one thing when Goliath intimidates you, but what do you do when the intimidation comes from within? And let me tell you, keep your distance, use your weapon, which is the Word of God. And if you don't get too close, you can't get killed. And some of you and me have been fighting God's battle on the enemy's terms. So what happens is I got a lot of stuff I want to accomplish. I mean, I'm already thinking I got to preach next Sunday too. And the sermon, the stress, and Goliath gets in my ear and I start worrying about something. Goliath gets in my ear and he says, yeah, think about all you have to do this week. Think about all the meetings you have to have. And you're not able. And he wants to overwhelm me. And right now, you know, boom. So what do I do? I got to step back. I need not to worry. I need to worship. And some of us are trying to solve relational issues, but you're using the weapons of this world. If you're trying to guilt people into doing something, or you're trying to make them feel bad. Let me tell you something about the voice of God. The voice of God does not accuse. The voice of God does not belittle, and the voice of God does not provoke. The voice of God may convict, but the voice of God uplifts. God will never rub your nose in your past faults and failures. That's not the voice of God. And remember when Jesus was on the cross and they told him to come on down. Hey, Jesus, come on down. Prove you're the Messiah. All he did was stretch his arms out. He said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Because Jesus knew his mission. And because Jesus only needed one weapon, and that was his blood. God's ways are so much higher than my ways. God's ways are so unfathomable. You know, he says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. That's what God says. So here's our challenge this week. Let's trust him.